Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Benchtown TV. I am Paul, and with me today are Kyle, Luke, and Dave. We're here talking The Witcher, Season 2, Episode 8, titled Family. It's the finale, the big one. Season complete. Geralt, Ciri, and Yen all together. What are your guys' initial reactions of how Season 2 wrapped up?
All right, I'll go first. Let me jump in before Dave.
Yeah, the rookie and, here.
Yeah. I want my version thoughts. So the ending, obviously, the reveal at the end was pretty insane. I've read that happens a little bit later in the series, but that was obviously quite crazy. I was a little suspicious of her father during the Volethmir, I guess, vision dream thing that she was in, but nothing on this level. So that was pretty crazy. I love the ending shot of Ciri, Geralt, and Yen of like, they're kind of like, we're back now in this, I guess we were never initially in this little threesome, but it's kind of solidified that this is our squad, which I really like. I don't love a lot of what they did, I guess, with the other Witchers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously someone who has never read the books. They just feel like we were building up towards a lot in the beginning, and then they kind of got forgotten about a little bit as the season went on, and then they kind of just got thrown to the wolves a bit in this episode. But I think overall it was good. But when I take a step back and like really think about what happened this season, it feels like it was another like prologue season almost. Similar to season one, how like a lot of things were happening and it was like establishing a foundation. I don't even know where I got this napkin from, but establishing a foundation for like to set the series up. But it feels like we kind of did that, but part two. So now it feels like we're again out of the prologue. So maybe like the first season was the preface. Now this is the prologue. That's kind of how it feels.
When you say it like that, I mean, the craziness of season one going all over the place, it was almost setting the foundation for the setup.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. With certain storylines, some of them, obviously the reveal of Ciri's dad is like, that's not prologue shit. That's like developed story shit. But I just feel like overall with a lot of the events.
I think those were really good points, and especially as someone who's read the books, I think it's still a very well done show. Once you get your mindset wrapped around the idea that this is just going to be totally different than the books, I think it opens your mind up to making this a great show. And yeah, I think my one trifle as well as yours, Kyle, was that the Witchers, the friendly Witchers at Kaer Morhen were just kind of throwaway characters almost this season, it felt like, except for maybe Vesemir, but everyone else really didn't have much of a purpose. And I'm hoping that they can still kind of redeem them in later seasons. We'll see. But overall, I thought the finale was incredible. The reveal was amazing. We didn't get that until like one of the later end books. So getting it here in season two, I thought was really a good place for it to go. And just excited for season three. This was a much better season than season one to me. I thought this was more fleshed out. It just felt more like an actual TV show than what they were doing in the first season. So I'm ready to talk about it.
So I think I agree with a lot of what you guys are saying. And Kyle, I think you nailed it, like especially about the Witchers. One of my biggest complaints early on in this season was that the thing I hated the most was just the fire magic, how they're treating all that. And then the Witchers, all the non-Geralt Witchers. And I said, except for Geralt and Vesemir. And I think Vesemir had a really bad episode. Like, I think he fell into everybody else now. Like, he was emotional and he was being like childish when Geralt seems like the only adult Witcher in the room. But outside of that, and I brought this up when we were talking about episode 7, I usually hate the possession storylines. I thought they even wrapped that up pretty nicely with Ciri, and the reveal of the monolith in the tree just fucking blew my mind. That came out of nowhere. I loved it because it really made sense to start utilizing Ciri's power and bring it all back to like the Istrid scenes in the earlier part of the season. So they really nailed all that. And then just the end stuff, especially the last 10 minutes, just felt Game of Thrones-esque in how they're jumping from all these important storylines and giving you a good season two ending point and also a really intriguing starting point going forward, where all the political pieces seem to have a lot more depth now that we're 16 episodes in. And, you know, Dijkstra, never will remember how to say his name, seems like he's going to be a huge fun player to talk about, like what he's got going on going into next season. And we got the awesome reveal that I've been waiting for with Philippa being the owl. That's been bouncing back and forth. We'll talk more about that too. But overall, I said it, I loved this season. I think it was better than season one. I think it's like approaching the level of better than the books, if it's not already for myself personally. It's just such a great take on The Witcher, and like having Ciri develop her powers earlier than they did in the books makes for what way better content. And we could possibly be like jumping from universe to universe at some points. Just seems like it's leaning into the multiverse that's going on with like Marvel. Like this seems to be like the popular theme right now, and I'll take it all. So far so good. This season was fantastic.
Yeah, I really liked it on the third watch through. I was a little shocked after the first watch because I just didn't understand what I was seeing. I mean, I've said it every recording that we've done, you know, just separating the stories. I've actually enjoyed it a lot more going in on the second rewatch. I think it's some things they're doing, it's really cool. Other things they're doing, I just hate. I don't really want to list all my gripes. I might do that at the end if I don't cover it. I started to do it, and then it was like kind of an essay, and I was like, eh, it's a little negative. Let's just go with the flow and see where it takes us. So the way we're going to cover this episode is like we've been doing. We're kind of going to go in character buckets and kind of location. We're going to start off real quick with the Cintra storyline with Francesca, Philivandril, Dara, and Cahir, and Fringilla. We're going to cover that real quick. Then we're going to cover Ciri in her dream worlds. Then we're going to cover all of Cara Morhen, basically the meat of the episode. And then we'll go through those big boy conversations at the end, scene by scene.
Sounds like a plan.
So starting off with the Cintra storyline, we get Philivandril and Francesca distraught over the death of their baby. And we actually get Dara telling them that he was sent by Dijkstra from Redania, obviously, to spy on them. He was told he was spying on Nilfgaard, but ends up using the elves' information. So Dara basically points them in the direction of Redania.
How open Francesca was to Dara's quote-unquote betrayal, it just shows you that she, like, if that was a human, obviously, she would have just killed him right on the spot, or, you know, even if it was a human she would have trust, I think that would have just broken a lot of bonds between her and her like human relationships. But because it's an elf, we see her kind of just, she's like, it's okay. Everything you did, like you just did it to survive. So I don't blame you. So I thought that was a cool perspective to add on to Francesca's already like die hard feelings for her elf people.
I thought he was fucked. I thought she was, especially with how brutal she is later in the episode. I thought it would have been a double win for me, because one, it would have been cool because I love Francesca and think she's a badass. And two, clean up Dara and get him out of my freaking story. And then everything would have been good, but whatever.
Isn't he like, this is going to sound wild, this is a crazy adjective, but it's the only one I can think of, but isn't he like a fertile elf? Like, is he not young enough to have a child?
Yeah, he probably
obviously
is.
He wouldn't bear the child, but to give it.
He probably is.
He looks like it. And I think this show does a really poor job of explaining that, because I mean, I've had to explain it multiple times to a few of you, and Jimmy included. So I think the job does a really poor job of explaining why elves are so like kind of distraught in the first place. We know they're on the run. We know their land's been taken, but like they're saying rebuild. So
yeah, they've literally leaned into like the whole like racism kind of the other thing where like they're oppressed because of that. And but yeah, I would agree that they haven't really, I don't even know if it's ever come up as like a real thing that they can't have kids potentially when Yen and Fringilla are with them early, but I don't remember. I feel like all the knowledge I have on that is from you.
Yeah. Again, I just wish they kind of explained that more. Dara, I would have kicked the hell out. Mm-hmm. I was like, dude, you were a spy that got my daughter killed. Like she says, this isn't your doing. You were just like doing what you needed to do to survive. But she takes that energy, says, fuck that. We're going to go into Redania, even though there's a bunch of babies that didn't have anything to do with my baby's death. We're just going to murder them all. Yeah, so like you see her, you see her putting signs on all the doors, all the houses. We don't know exactly what it was. If it was like your firstborn is killed, or only all the babies in Redania are killed. We don't really know what it was, but we do hear a bunch of crying babies. And we see Francesca, you know, say the line, what has been need not always be. She just lowers her hands. All the babies stop crying. And then all the mothers start yelling.
That was really good. I thought that was really well done.
That was like insane. And I can't even imagine what the repercussions are. Like, do you think King Visimir is going to, one, know? I guess because Jixtra is going to find out somehow that Dar is no longer, he already has that information by the end of the episode. But do you think that's going to affect Redania in a meaningful way? Or is it just going to, is that just meant to build up Francesca and her vindictiveness, and that's going to kind of just set the playing field of what she's going to be going forward? Because I don't know how important Redania really is outside of just having Visimir and Jixtra being representatives of that country.
While I like this scene in it, like isolated by itself, like I thought it was cool, like you guys were saying, I don't like it at all for the story, because exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
I could see all this happening and King Visimir is like, ha, who cares? Like, I don't give a shit about my people. Like, it wasn't me. I'm not the one personally affected. Like, it's all it is, in my eyes, is creating a bigger rift between the elves and the humans. Any of the humans that might have any, like, I don't want to say respect, but, you know, treat elves equal to humans. That's probably out the window, because the queen of the elves literally just went around murdering babies. And I get that she's insane. Her brother, like one of the higher generals, I guess you can call him, comes up and says, are you sure this is like the right thing to do? I know what you've been through.
He was a random, right? We didn't know him.
Brother. I think he was
in the episodes. Right? Yeah. In episode one and two, I believe. Okay. They kind of talk to each other, Francesca. And I think his name is Bruges. They have a short conversation before they actually go in to see the Deathless Mother. So he's kind of been around, but again, I think he's made up.
And I think there you go. I think that'll be the voice of reason for Francesca. Like, I think if they do go the route of trying to patch up human and elven relationship, then he would be the person, it seems like, because he's saying what you were saying, Paul. Just these babies had nothing to do with it. Like, this isn't going to help you at all. Like, this is just pointless. And so I think he'll be a good voice of reason going forward.
But angry Francesca is fun, Francesca.
Yeah, that was a really awesome scene.
She was really cool.
Yeah.
I think it was the dumbest decision in the world to do that. I think it's taints her character almost, and going forward, and it's just going to like cause more problems. Definitely was insane just to see how powerful she was though.
Yeah.
When you say that it's dumb, do you mean like it's a dumb writing choice, or it's just like Francesca as a character in the show, it's stupid for her to do that?
Both. Because when I say the first one, writing choice, I mean like, I kind of had a Francesca in my head, and now I don't think it's going to get there. I think it's going to be a different person. And I mean, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, in the show,
it seems like a very believable decision.
But all she says is retribution. Is like, she says like, why are we doing this? I think Dara comes up, and again, it's like, why is Dara a spy now? One of your higher ups automatically felt weird, but it also felt strange because they were trying to say like, are you sure this is going to happen? And Phil Evandrel was like, no further steps are going to be taken without retribution. So I guess the way they see it, you know, one elf baby, like the first one in Lord knows how long, is equal to like 100 human babies, 1,000 human babies.
Dude, they're going to kill so many more in season 3, I would say. They're going to kill so many more. They don't care at this point. They had no hope forever, got a glimmer of hope, got it ripped away from them. They don't care about anything anymore is the vibe that I'm getting.
And it's also the other thing that rubbed me the wrong way about it is all they're going off of right now is Dara. Is Dara ratting and snitching on Dijkstra. That's the only reason they're kind of going towards Redania right now, which is... I was like, before you make any rash moves, maybe get some confirmation. Mm-hmm. But I digress. A bunch of babies dead. Elves are on the prowl now. They're not in Sintra. They're not with Nilfgaard, it seems, at all. Because speaking of, we get to Fringilla and Cahir. They're in the throne room prepping for Emperor Emir to come. And Fringilla breaks the news saying some elves left, including Francesca and Phil Evandrel. So our scouts said they were riding north towards Verdania on stolen horses, basically all because of the child. And even Frangilla says all fingers point towards Verdania. So, you know, I can't blame Francesca too much for just assuming it, I guess. Cahir takes this weirdly well. And I didn't know what was kind of his deal in the beginning. And he's like, hey, don't worry. You wanted Francesca here to show Amir that you were a valuable leader and asset, right? Well, you can still do that. Just when he arrives, say, hey, I was the one that killed the elven baby, because now they're taking out our enemies for us and they don't even suspect us.
I thought that was well done. I mean, I thought Cahir, I mean, just coming off of almost being killed and like how much of a bitch Frangilla was to him. Like, this is just like a rub in your face. Like, okay, like, I think he's just playing the part of this is like what you wanted, basically. Like, like, even if you didn't want the baby dead, like, the baby's dead now and you can take, you can just accept it and move up in the ranks like you wanted. So I like the angle that he's coming from here. I think it's more of like a rub in your face kind of thing.
So did you guys initially think like right away that she didn't do it?
I thought
I didn't believe it.
Did you think Cahir had anything to do it, or you just totally thought it was going to be a third party?
I mean, I fell into the hole. It was Verdania.
Okay. Because I didn't know either. My note is literally, I can't tell if she did it or not, but I was leaning not because of how her facial acting was going on. And she seemed a little bit surprised, but then her words were like kind of just accepting of it, which was fine. It worked out. And I thought that part was all written well, with the end reveal being it was neither of them. That was,
yeah. I thought it was Cahir. Like, during this conversation, I thought it was Cahir that did it and was like, oh, I'll give you credit. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I was leaning Jigstra.
Yeah, I thought Cahir, I guess jumping off of Dave's point, it just seemed more like a, like he was thinking very tactically, like a military commander, in the sense of like, this is the situation now, so we need to build off of what it is now, instead of, you know, being upset about how it happened and what happened. Like, this is just the obvious next step.
This
continues kind of the roller coaster from Jill's character, of where she's like, you know, I wouldn't do that because Francesca was my friend. But then we see her like fuck around and do insane shit on the other side of the coin. So it's like, okay, she just like hasn't figured herself out either. Yeah. She's trying to like get all this power and like have all this influence to like control world events, but she can't even control like what's inside of her own heart and her head.
Preach. Preach it, Kyle.
I really like this scene for Amir. Cahir. I think he was really smart in his quick thinking, and it was a leader move to do that. Just, you know, hey, we have a problem now. I'm going to make it look like we are great. But that was it for all the setup. Besides the meat of the story, we are going to cover Ciri in the dream world real quick before we get to actual Kaer Morhen.
This is all bullshit. So,
pretty much. It's a lot of screen time for not a lot of actual information.
It would mean more if they were memories, but they're not. It's just a false scenario. So none of what happens or any of the information we get like is real. Yeah.
This is actually the opening scene. Ciri wakes up in her childhood bed. She's in a dress. Malsak comes in. She doesn't really know what's going on. She seems like she thinks she's dreaming, but even Malsak is like kind of tricking her a little bit, like, you're fine, ballroom, let's go right now, your mother's gonna be pissed.
That was the only thing I would shout out, is the fact how well the dreamscape made her feel like it was real, and how like their reactions, like even when she wasn't looking, you know, they were still confused at why she was acting this way, like they felt real. So I'll just give a shout out to that.
But on the opposite side of the coin, I also appreciate the line, at least initially, from Ciri waking up and having enough exposure around Geralt and all these weird things, and being with Triss and the dream sequence thing earlier this season, she kind of knows it's not real. And she's going back and forth between knowing it's not real. And now she's like, the fuck is going on? And then I think it hits the title sequence. So I get that. I like, it's not tropey where she's just going to be falling into this vision and hypnotized and be like, oh my God, Malsak. So I like,
yeah. Even when she says what the fuck's going on, Malsak claps back with like, oh, watch your mouth, like even tricking her more and more, up until like he says, hey, your mother's gonna be pissed, and she says, oh my God, my mother's alive. That's like the crazy part. So she goes into the ballroom. Ballroom's popping. Calanthe is there. She sits down next to her. She's like finishing her sentences because she's so happy to be home. Usually she was this like kind of annoying brat who didn't want to do any of her responsibilities. But here she's gladly dancing with these.
Martin.
Yeah. Martin, the chump. I guess they're sons of these other houses. Yeah. So it's like saying, oh my God, I'm so happy that I don't even care if this is a dream.
Her Calanthe and Mousesack are just like questioning her odd behavior.
So I love that the actors were willing to come in for just one episode. I thought they were gonna, because earlier in the Triss vision quest sequence with Ciri, they have Calanthe speak, but they don't show her face. And I thought that was gonna be just because, you know, we can't get the actor to come do this, but then she's in this episode, which was such a good surprise for me because I think that actor is like a scene stealer. I think she's awesome and like powerful when she's on screen. And then Mousesack was just nice to see, but I'm just awesome that the people liked Witcher enough to come back for like one scene for the whole series, second season.
Yeah, I was definitely on that boat. Yeah. I thought when they showed her, I think it was like episode 5 with the Triss, exactly what you said. And then it shocked me. She just pops up here. They get done dancing. Mousesack is saying something like, hey, if you did fuck him, you'd get a great bloodline going. She was like, I was like, Mousesack, that's a really fucking weird thing to say. She asked more about her bloodline. Mousesack's kind of avoiding it. And then he finally distracts her with, well, look over there. There's your parents. That's pretty much what it was. And in comes Dunia and Pavetta. And they have a short little conversation like, we've been here the whole time, always loving you. You're a special girl. And this is when shit kind of hits the fan. I mean, she already turns around and sees Mousesack, kind of a doppelganger from season 1. She's hearing like, you know, a Geralt voice kind of yelling. So we're going to come back to this right after we cover the rest of the Cara Morhen storyline. Did you guys have any thoughts on Ciri's dreams?
Absolutely no comment from me.
Yeah, I think we're pretty good.
No, yeah, right.
Honestly, like you said, I just really like Mousesack's actor.
You like his hair bun, his man bun.
Literally took the words straight out of my mouth. That's exactly what the next thing I was going to say was.
Reminds me of Loghain a little bit.
A little chunkier Loghain version.
Looks a little dirtier, though. This guy looks a lot cleaner, but I guess because he's not out there fighting armies.
I will also say, I also just really enjoy seeing Ciri happy. I think it's been a very long time since we've seen her like smiling like that. So I can understand also why she would want to stay. Even though she knew it was a dream, I could still understand why she would want to stay.
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget how young she is.
We all have dreams where we wake up and we're like, fuck, why'd you wake me up? I was having a good dream.
Mm-hmm.
So jumping to Cara Morhen, that real world Ciri, we first get her kind of walk in the halls.
I've been calling her Monster Ciri, MC.
MC, yeah. Deathless Mother Possessed Ciri is pretty much of a mouthful. So Monster Ciri is walking around. She ends up going to the trophy room and grabbing the knife that Vesemir told her about in episode 2. It was when all the sleuths were there and she just kind of like was roaming the halls. It was cool that he actually did bring up on the rewatch in episode 2, you know, this Witcher was the first Witcher that died by a demon who we locked away in the woods, and she killed him with this knife.
Nice. I did not catch that.
That is really cool. Yeah.
The knife was in the dream too. Was it not in the palace? She walks past it, I think, in her dream as well, right around the same time when she grabs it in Cara Morhen.
Good catch.
I gotcha. Yeah, I'll have to go back and see that, but that's cool. That's shit. I think this knife, it was cool that when she actually saw it, her like face, Ciri's, MC's face just kind of like lit up a little bit. Like she was like, oh my God, I thought I lost that. So she proceeds to go around Cara Morhen and slit a bunch of throats. What did you guys think about this?
Savage. I did not expect this at all. Holy shit. The Witchers are they're such fodder.
Right. Yeah,
that was the first thing, especially with the way that she kills the first guy.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of almost like overpowers him and slits his throat. Like less so with the second guy, which she just kind of stabs in the heart while he's sleeping. It's kind of hard to do much about that. But yeah, I was just kind of the biggest thing I got from it, more so than oh shit Siri, was just that these dudes are kind of weak.
I was really worried the first one was Cohen, and I was gonna like freak a leak that they just killed off one of the main like witchers of the fodder, I guess you could call it. But I thought it was savage at the end of the day. Really cool. Just
best of the fodder.
I just really in this moment I was just like, I really hope Siri doesn't remember all this, because if she learned that she did all this, like just how heartless she was here, this would just send her over the edge. So I was really worried about that. But I thought, like, she's so in her dream state, she literally probably has no recollection of doing this.
Well, the good news about them killing so many of these witchers is that they can't be in the next season. So I'm hoping that the writers, you know, learn a little bit and step the fuck away from Kaer Morhen, because this is turning into, every time we're at Kaer Morhen, it feels like it's my least favorite scenes of the season. Yeah. Just because they're just so forgettable and weak, and the opposite of what their lore is in the books, of just miniature versions of Geralt. Like, Geralt is the epitome and he is like the goat, but everybody else should be very fucking competent.
Were they just not wearing their medallions at night, or what would they do with them?
Yeah, see, that was one of the dumbest things in the world, was they weren't wearing their medallions. It was literally on the bedside table right next to them. And no reason they shouldn't be wearing them, because it would alert them if something happens while they're sleeping. That's the big use of it. And that was kind of my other thing. I think their medallions would have been vibrating off the chain with, you know, one of the original demons walking around the halls. I don't know if it was masked by being in Siri, but it goes off a lot of times, for whether it be monsters or magic. So I don't know exactly why they weren't freaking out right here.
Okay, so I'm going to say two things to that. One, as you were talking, this is just kind of what came to my mind. So one is that maybe they don't sleep with them specifically at Kaer Morhen, just because maybe, I'm just defending it, this might be a stupid defense.
Devil's advocate.
Yeah, just devil's advocate, but maybe it's just because they feel safe here. Like, Kaer Morhen's not the easiest place to find and locate, so maybe in that sense they feel safe. But I also agree it's pretty stupid. But also, even when Geralt found Monster Siri, his medallion, it didn't look like it was vibrating that much, like as much as it normally does. And again, I don't know if that's because what you were saying, with, because maybe it was a combination of Siri's body with the soul of the Deathless Mother there. Maybe that's why they weren't going off, but still agree they should still probably have them on at night.
Yeah, they've never really clarified too much on the rules of the medallion, so I don't really have any comments. It doesn't seem too consistent, though.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is consistency again. Like, when Eskel in episode 2, when he turned into a full Leshy, mm-hmm. in the other room, all of their medallions, including the ones on the tree, started freaking out. So I know there was shit flying back and forth through the air, but they didn't really show any of the medallions vibrating at all, or at least that I could see. And I was just a little upset with that.
Yeah, that was honestly one of the cooler, like, little magic things that I feel like was introduced this season. I don't remember it being a thing in season 1. So that is kind of disappointing.
Dude, that's the best when you're reading the books and it's like, Geralt's in the middle of a thought and he's like, all of a sudden his medallion started vibrating. And I was like, oh, let's go.
Yeah, shit's going to go down.
Yeah, we're going to get some killing. So Siri gets around. She ends up killing a bunch. I'm not exactly sure the number.
I thought it was only two. I thought it was only those two.
I think she kills 3 people.
They show at least 3, and then they kind of go on to say a few more names. I believe it was just those 3 that they showed. I don't know if it was any more. But she ends up going to Vesemir's room, is going to kill him, and Geralt and Yen just ride up. So they obviously couldn't teleport from the Deathless Mother Forest, so they ride on their horses to Kaer Morhen, and they get there just in time. They get there while the Monster Siri is about to stab Vesemir, and Geralt figures it out pretty quick.
Love, you know, that.
Monster Siri tries to say, you know, she pulls the young girl voice, like hides the veins growing in her face, and says like, oh, like I saw an old woman in a robe, like running around, saw it come out of the one witch's room. Geralt's like, well, how'd you get out of it? And she was like, oh shit. Well, I screamed, didn't wake anybody or damage anything. And I think what was confirmed, I don't know exactly what it was, but I think he goes up to Siri. There's like a cut on her cheek. And I think he like feels it. And because blood didn't come off or something like that, or I don't know if I'm just making that up, or if he was just checking. But after he does the little cut on the cheek thing, he's that like,
could,
what do you
that
want?
That could be right, because she gets stabbed by Vesemir later in this episode and instantly heals and doesn't bleed. So that could be right.
Was that the thing that, or was he looking for a wound mark from like taking all the damage from the obstacle course and then noticed that it wasn't there?
I don't think that was her blood.
Was there
when would she, unless she cut herself with her own knife in the face, in the cheek? I don't.
It also could be, Dave, what you were saying, not the obstacle course, but the episode prior, we get Geralt saving her while she's fighting the Sintran soldiers outside the gates, and they did kind of put on a scuffle. Maybe she cut her cheek there or something. And
was it there when she was killing the other witchers? I didn't notice it.
No, see, that's the thing. You know, I didn't really get that. I tried looking it up, but
I thought it was that. Yeah, she had blood on her face.
Mm.
I didn't even notice there was blood. I just thought he was just like,
that wasn't her.
Literally, just him feeling her face, be like, yeah, "Is this Siri?" kind of thing. But okay.
All right. Well, who cares? Either way, though, this led to something. I can't believe the missed opportunity at this spot, because once Monster Siri has it figured out, she instantly tries to kill Geralt and like slices like his face. I thought that was going to give him the infamous scar that he has in all the Witcher games in the cover where he has the eye cut, because that would have been perfect. I was begging for that to be a thing, but I think it was just a cut that was similar spot. Cause isn't it right down his eye too, like Zorro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a funny thought. I never got that. I don't know if he gets that in a game or if he's always had that, but yeah, it's like the iconic scar. That would have been a really cool story behind it. It's like the Nick Fury eye thing. I was kind of pissed that she hit him though, if I'm honest. I'm like, come on, Geralt, you're a Witcher. You can't, and you know, she's like, something's wrong with her. You can't dodge or block out of the way, but he didn't have any
weakness. That's
true.
Tonight.
He's freaking out. His thoughts are probably, holy shit, somebody's possessed Siri, not she's going to punch me in the face. So you're right there. But yeah, exactly. She kind of runs away and now everybody's up in arms. They show Vesemir going to all of the other witches' rooms and seeing dead bodies. And then he's like pretty much had it. He's like, all right, let's fucking go. Get all the elixirs you can. We don't know what else she can do.
That was hype. They all start popping them, and you see Vesemir look all badass.
Yeah. Lambert had a line here where he's like, I can't believe Siri did this, killed her brothers in our own home. And Cohen, who seems to be the voice of reason in The Witchers, besides Geralt, is like, that wasn't Siri. Like, whoever that wasn't Siri. I just hate Cohen in the show. Yeah, I'm sorry. I hate Lambert. I like Cohen in the show. He's good. We also, this is where we got the opening title sequence. I did want to mention that just because it was really cool.
It was the coolest one by far.
Yes,
holy shit.
By far the best one.
That was like an image. It's just multiverse. Like that's pretty much what it is.
I got that as the conjunction. Like that was.
Yeah.
Going back to my theory from episode one or two, where we're going to get a second conjunction. What?
It was pretty good. I didn't say anything because I think I did see the finale at the time. So
we'll see what happens, because even if it doesn't happen in the books, it seems like there's a chance that it could still happen in the show, because
oh hell yeah,
they're not following the books very closely. So
animation of the spheres colliding and then coming back together. I don't know if that was supposed to be the tree, the Witcher tree, because when all the fragments do come back together, they form a tree. I don't know if it was that Witcher tree in particular. That would be cool if it was, and it would be cool if we get some informations in Witcher Blood Origins. Whenever that show's coming out.
True.
That would be really cool.
I have a terminal Wheel of Time brain and was just thinking that was just like a Vendasaur, like the Tree of Life.
Could be. Maybe it's a crossover episode. They're not following the book, so fuck it.
The sphere is like the one sphere could be the Wheel of Time.
It'd be quite the conjunction. No, I'm just thinking. I feel like everyone in The Witcher would probably die.
Yeah, probably.
No offense, Paul.
No, I mean, these witches are bitches.
Just kidding.
These witchers are bitches, man.
Paul's identity is tied to The Witcher, and Kyle's is the Wheel of Time, so no offense, Paul.
Yeah, look at pretty much.
There.
Where were we? So, Vesemir's taking the elixir, and again, I like how they just don't shy away from showing the transformation from, you know, human or witcher two like black eyes and pale skin. I like that they do kind of watch it happen because it does make it cooler. It happens here with Vesemir. It happens later with Lambert. We get a quick conversation with Geralt and Vesemir. Geralt's trying to tell Vesemir the battle isn't with Ciri. Like, come on, you know this. Fucking Vesemir brings up when you killed Askel, it broke me, but you were right, it had to be done. Same as now. Ciri has to be eliminated.
Demoted Vesemir in my head, like a whole tier of character basically from this one conversation. I was like, you suck now.
Yeah, he's kind of a sucker this whole episode.
It doesn't make sense. Yeah. He has the full turnaround after the fight when, like, I don't know. He's like,
Wolf, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I should have listened to you.
Yeah, it's like, okay, bro. You literally stabbed her. We all saw it. And you tried to almost kill Geralt. Like, we saw you swinging that sword at him.
Oh, we'll get to that. That was a badass moment in, like, caused by shitty writing. When he, like, yeah, we'll get to
that. Yeah. Amazing Geralt moment. Professor Mir is garbage to me now. I mean,
yep.
I don't know. It's not even the actor. It's just the writing behind his actions. I hope we're not shitting on it too much because we do like it.
Well, honestly, we're not even like we got to get to the good parts. The good parts is the end.
Yeah, right. So again, Vesemir kind of goes with Geralt a little bit. He's not fully on board, but he's like, all right, I'll help you out because Geralt says, I need you, line. Yen comes up. Geralt walks right by Yen, doesn't pay her any attention, still kind of pissed at her, given the silent treatment.
Like a boss.
Yeah, Yen's like, fuck, I got to do something. So she goes to Yashki's room. She's like, wake up. And he's snoozing. You know, he's got the post-drunk nappies. And he's like, dude, the last time I woke up and you were at the end of the bed, you grabbed my balls and blew up the building. So I'm going to go back to bed.
Oh, my God.
I loved that because I actually watched an interview with Joey and Anya, and that scene where she like grabs him by the dick and he's like, she's like, sing for me. And he starts singing, toss a coin to your penis. That was completely ad-libbed. That was just Yashkir and Anya doing their own thing.
Grabbed his junk off script.
Maybe they talked about it like in the moment before it happened.
That would be crazy.
But I
would have been a stunt double. That would have been fine.
Yeah, can you sing like Yashkir?
She could have tested out her touch, her grip strength on me.
God, this is where our fucking review comes from.
What? She's hot.
Is this when they go to?
Yen just goes to the lab. And she starts working on a cure. And she. I actually don't even remember what the real purpose of that item that she gives to Yashkir to give to Geralt ends up being. It's like the thing they mentioned, like balance.
Jasper.
Yeah.
Energy.
What did that end up being?
Nothing.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I think it was like a way to right wrongs was something they were talking about.
Geralt looks at it at the end and he's like, oh, that's it. Like the Jasper itself isn't actually used.
Okay. So yeah, I didn't like that part because it felt like that was Yen's whole purpose throughout this scene was, I mean, she was cooking shit up and she had the cool line. I'm going to do what witches do best. I'm going to make a potion or something like that. Which she doesn't use. So like that whole scene to me was just, it was only good because the actors are awesome, but like the content didn't make much whatever.
This was like my personal only trifle with the episode was just the fact that Jasper, I just don't know what it does still.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just skip it.
We'll get there. Yeah. Basically it gives Yashkir purpose as Yashkir. Now you have to go run into the room where all the action's happening. So we cut to Monster Ciri. She is at the main hall, you know, with the Witcher tree and the medallions. It's funny, Geralt's the one that finds her. But as soon as he does, all the other ones kind of rush in. We did get the really cool scene of all the witchers kind of going around drinking the elixirs, grabbing their swords. And we see Cohen like open a door and only one eye is black because like his scarred eye doesn't get affected by the elixir anymore. Mm. So that was really cool. But yes, they all rush in. Geralt deduces really quickly she wasn't trying to escape. So what is her motive now? They go through the whole conversation. Give me Ciri back. You know, that's not how it works. It's not a matter of price. It's a matter of cost, which I don't understand the difference between those. If I'm honest,
I think that comes down to the way I took it the second time. Because the first time I was like, "What the fuck does that mean?" But it seems more like it's not up to her; it's up to him.
Okay, gotcha.
Like price would be that she would set the conditions, while cost it's what's costing him. So it's what he's willing to give up versus what she's willing to take from him.
Gotcha. Thank you, because even after three times, I was like, Sierra, you're not making sense here. But eventually they get the make your ask line. Geralt says, hey, I will be your vessel. Leave her alone. She's like, that would be fun, but no. And this is where Gaskier runs in yelling. It's like, hey, Geralt. And he's like, you guys are busy. Yeah. He's just like, he thinks about it. He's like, yeah, no, never mind. Pure, like walks away again.
Pure comedy relief this episode. He had maybe like six lines and they were all like either interrupted or completely new, like just unnecessary to anyone else in the room. So mm-hmm. great. Yasker is always a good person for that.
Hell yeah. But this is actually where shit starts to hit the fan, because after the Witchers get interrupted by Yaskier, they turn around and unsheathe their swords. This causes Monster Siri to scream at the Witcher tree for the first time. And the tree cracks open and reveals the mini monolith or Stellacite. Maybe it's not a monolith, but it is Stellacite. Even Vesemir was like, what the fuck? Because that's
that was great.
That's what we were all thinking.
That was such a good plot twist. It wasn't guessable, of course, but it was. It's so cool. If you're going to lean into the monoliths, like really lean into them, this is the way to do it. It makes Kaer Morhen way special. It makes the tree just like more epic. I just thought it was perfect.
I think this one is definitely going to be more important than maybe like said other ones, because if there's a reason it's at Kaer Morhen and there's a reason that the tree was quote unquote protecting it. So interested to see how they tackle this monolith, especially since the monoliths again aren't book material. So I'm excited to see how they do it, yet at the same time, a little fearful if they steer a little too far off, you know?
That still blows my mind that these aren't from the books.
I know.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think that Blood Origin will actually have a lot to do with this monolith, probably just because they were the first Witchers. They probably planted the tree that grew around it or something along those lines. But really quickly, if you paused it when they first reveal it, there is like glyphs and carvings in the top of it. So it was touched by some type of intelligence. Like I assume it was used for magical powers before.
Dude, they're just
monolith.
Yeah. Yes. They're basically just pony glyphs. I just can't get that out of my head, especially when I saw it right there. I was like, Roger was here, man. He was fucking right in there.
That was the engravings on the top of it. It was just Roger was here.
Honestly, that could be it. Be like, hey, first Witchers.
Yo, man, the multiverse is open. One of those spheres could be the One Piece sphere.
That would be amazing. Just Luffy as a Witcher, which stretchy Witcher.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, everyone in the Witcher world would die again.
Yes, again. Sorry, everyone in the Witcher world is bitches.
Yeah, sorry, Paul.
Geralt would last a little bit and then die. But you don't get a quick, you don't get too long of a look, I should say, of the monolith, because Monster Siri just obliterates it. She cracks it into a million shards with a scream and then throws all the shards at the Witchers. And
cue the really badass part of this episode.
Yep.
This was all cool. All the Witchers were pulling out the Ken or Quen sign, Quen, and that's basically just a shield. They've used it once or twice. It was really cool. Like, you can see slow motion, like Henry Cavill hitting his chest and then getting the shield out there just in time to block all the fragments.
The very first guy does not. Whoever the first one was closest to Siri just gets wrecked.
Yeah, it doesn't get it up in time. The first one and the last one, because after all the shards go this way, she reverses it. And the last guy was not able to turn his Ken shield back in time.
That was
I did notice that when like it goes back to when the basilisks actually come out, like that guy's fine. That guy, he's
oh really?
They're all just like swords out, ready to go. Like the shower of the shards never happened. I noticed that on my second watch.
That's actually really funny.
So these monsters that come out, might be the best looking monsters of the show. Like maybe even more specifically the third one, the one that Geralt kills in like the coolest way ever. But the one positive, I guess, about the Witchers I'll give them in this episode was at this moment when these two basilisks walks out, they like creep out. All of the Witchers are just confident as fuck. They just whip the swords out, like ready to go. And that's correct. Like they shouldn't be scared, even though these things are fucking insane. But that little detail was good because they weren't like, you know, you didn't have any people like freaking out.
And these were new basilisks too, that they, a species of basilisk that they hadn't recognized before. Mm-hmm. So
again, yeah, I think they sucked because really they're trained to fight certain beasts in certain ways. And they've never seen this beast, so they don't know how to go about fighting it. That was my headcanon to why they all got slaughtered, not because they were weak.
Okay.
Geralt is just the best, obviously. But I did like how on the third rewatch, you know, because I already said, like, what the fuck's going on in the first one? I couldn't emotionally set aside that Ciri is just creating a portal to another world in the middle of Kaer Morhen and unleashing basilisks. I was freaking out. But I did like how the fragments ended up, you know, circling, creating the portal. I thought it was a cool use of, like Luke said, yes, great CGI budget. But if they're leaning into it, I at least like what they're doing with it. Real quickly, Geralt tells Vesemir and another Witcher to cast Urden, which is another sign. And this is kind of just like a trap. Use it in the games to slow your enemies.
Wheel of Time.
Like shielded.
Yeah, I was just thinking of how they just trapped...
Loghain,
yeah.
We get like conversation between Geralt and Ciri in this bubble saying, like, tell me what you want. She's the future and you're in my way. So they just end up fighting inside this bubble. It was funny. I don't know. I was like, what is the goal here? Are you going to kill yet? They're like, Geralt? Like, I don't know. Yeah,
because that's the part when Geralt, you know, we're flashing back and forth between Ciri's mind and what's actually happening in the tree room. And like Geralt's starting to get through to her subconscious because she's screaming Ciri's name. And in the Syntra throne room, you're hearing Geralt's voice. But yeah, dude, when Geralt just no look blocks Vesemir, because Vesemir's like given up on the idea that they're going to survive this without just murdering Ciri.
Yeah.
That moment was just, it was this almost as cool as when Vesemir or when Geralt no looks Yennefer in that last episode. Like he's just so aware. And yeah. I just love that. Like I think he's the best.
Ciri even, well, Monster Ciri kind of even taunts him of like, you're not going to get here. Like, and then Geralt just stops him, of course. So I thought that was a nice little line too.
You think you're going to get through Geralt to get to me? You idiot. Like... And that happens because Vesemir and the other Witcher end up dropping their Yurden signs because all the other Witchers were dying. They ran to help fight the other two basilisks. Mm-hmm. Yet, the still two basilisks were still alive and kicking and killing people. No damage.
Do they not get one of them at least with the fodder?
They get both of them at the very end, right before they all hold hands and come together. Hmm. But yeah, they're still running wild and like getting their faces chomped off. I kind of liked that CGI. That was like really gruesome, but really cool. Geralt's yelling at Ciri this whole time to stay strong, like Luke said, getting the flashes. So this is where the big boy comes in. I mean, we kind of already talked about him. Geralt is just the best. I mean, there's how many Witchers and two smaller basilisks? Geralt 1v1s this big guy. 40, 45 seconds, 50 seconds, already dead.
And tell me again, because I know you guys watched it a little bit more recently than me. How did he get the final kill on the bridge out there? Isn't it just... like so, the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. He gets knocked on his back on the bridge and the basilisk is drooling over him and it's like corrosive drool. Like there's acid on his armor, which actually stays there at the end scene. Another detail that I really liked. But he throws up the Igni sign. So the basilisk throws his head back. And then when the fire stops, he comes back, but Geralt already has the sword there. So like the basilisk impales himself and then he just stands up and then it's like a shish kebab. Mm-hmm. He has both parts of his head on the sword and then just pulls forward and makes it into fours of his,
my
bottom
God,
and upper.
Nobody knows how to use gravity like Geralt, bro. He in the in best. The Rience when he kills the brothers, it's just so fucking cool, man. And you got to know that Henry was like hyped to do that motion and like film that part.
And then he just body checks it off the bridge real quick.
Yeah, that was cool. He's like, fuck you. And it just like falls.
It looked great too, the way it fell and everything and landed.
Mm-hmm.
They have been killing it, I feel like, with the way the monsters look and things like that. The last thing I'll say, if you're going to make a lot of these changes and, you know, you understanding that you're probably going to alienate some fans, but at least it looks good when they're doing a lot of these things. So that makes it a little harder to get super upset at it.
I think these are some of the best CGI battles like in any movie or show ever. Like, they're just so well choreographed and the CGI is just phenomenal. It just looks like it's like real. It's just incredible what they're doing here.
It's nuts, and it draws in a lot of fans. I mean, it drew me in season one. So
the Michelet brother
fight, they're doing a good job.
The Michelet brother fight is still my favorite, or however you pronounce that, this season, I think, and probably of the series. But this is up there.
I still think the choreography of the end of episode one in season one is the best.
See, I was
getting
the same vibes from the Michelet brother fight. Like, it felt like the same kind of fight almost. So those two are my favorite without a doubt, but I would give the edge. Maybe because
Is Johnny
bias.
Dogs?
Yeah,
Peaky
Johnny
Blinders
Dogs
in that scene, because I don't think he is.
The goat.
That would be fun to go back and rate all of Geralt's fights from the first two seasons.
This one's definitely top three. I think it is probably.
I like the Striga one. Striga one.
You guys made a good point, though. It's almost like cooler watching Geralt fight humans than it is monsters, because the choreography between the human combat is pretty nuts.
And it's like crazy how
Henry Cavill.
He also can just wield that sword just so fast. I know it's not. What was
we already talked about that, because it's like a half sword in real life. But
it's just, I love how fast he can wield it still at the end of the day.
When it's not fighting scenes, he actually does do it. Because I watched one of his workout videos where he was like, yeah, I got a big scene coming up in the next few days where I have to wield this, you know, 17-pound sword around. So I'm doing arms. I was like, you're a beast.
He's doing arms.
Yeah, that's what he was doing.
That's what he's definitely doing.
Respect, Henry, respect.
Geralt walks into the throne room. Everything is hitting the fan. Yen is walking in saying, I made a potion to extract the Deathless Mother. He still is just paying her no attention. This is when Vesemir walks up, stabs Ciri in the side, which I was like, come on, Vesemir, you suck ass, but whatever. Geralt's like, dude, if you kill her, you kill Ciri. And Vesemir gets this weird look where he's like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm like, come on, you fucking idiot. The Deathless Mother goes into a little monologue about how the Witchers feel everything, especially hate. You know, maybe they don't show it or they don't feel it as much, but they do, especially hatred. This is when Lambert and Cohen take out the other two Basilisks.
Yeah.
Finally. And we also see Geralt look down at the Jasper. He's like, Jasper gives the courage to rectify wrongs. That gives him the epiphany that hate is what she is using to grow stronger. So let's not give her what she wants. Mm-hmm. This is where they all come together shoulder to shoulder and go, Ciri, if you can hear me, come home.
Vesemir is probably he's losing his touch a little bit, don't you think?
Definitely.
I think that's the angle they're taking, and he's getting a little old.
Sliding into dementia.
Damn. That's what it seems like. Yeah.
He's like, let me stab this little girl. I understand. I don't know.
He's like, oh, did I say that? Nah, I don't fuck with that anymore. That's out the window.
Oh my God. So as they're all yelling to her, this is where Ciri in her dream, in her trance, is talking to her mother, but she's hearing her mother and father, but she's hearing Geralt's and all the other witcher's voice, you know, come back to us. Can you hear us, girl? Cohen was the one saying that. Vesemir is, I believe in you. I'm sorry for what I did. That was just like, bro, you just not now. Okay. Maybe you should just sit this one out while everybody else cheers her on.
The power of friendship.
Yeah. So eventually Ciri gets pulled back to the real world, but before she does, she sees everybody in her dream turn to ash. She
Dude,
sees Calanthe.
It was the snap from Avengers, straight up.
Yeah, it was Calanthe, Mousak, and Pavetta was all turning to ash. If you were paying attention,
yep,
I was.
Dooney does not ash up at all. He's not ashy. He's using his lotion.
And you think it's just because he's alive?
Like, I didn't catch that. That's cool.
I think everybody that turned to ash in her dream were people that are dead.
Mm-hmm.
And Dooney, because he was not dead, was obviously not turning. So I was curious if they were going to actually, the first watch through, just leave it at that. But the end scene, the big scene, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. This was just the intro to everything that was getting wrapped up in this last like 15 minutes.
Yeah. So to wrap up the end of this Deathless Mother storyline, they realize, Yen specifically realizes that she needs to right the wrong. I don't know exactly what that means, but she just throws the potion on the bottle, uses the glass, and slices her wrist, and blood was just gushing. Oh, that was nuts. Her blood pressure is insane. She must be stressed all the time. Eventually, she says, I can be the vessel for her. That is her goal. She starts chanting an elder. Eventually, you see the ashes of the Deathless Mother form when she's not in a vessel, kind of transfer some from Siri to Yen. And Yen is just kind of sitting there in a daze. She's not really doing anything. Siri comes to, and Geralt is like, hey, I know you've been through a lot, but I need you to open a portal. We're trying to get this bitch back to where she came from.
And pause real quick, because I thought it was like, I don't know if it was done purposely, but the whole Yennefer thing in this scene seemed like there was two good callbacks to her backstory and her in season one, like the vessel, obviously referring to what she was trying to do with the genie back in, when she met Geralt. And then also The first thing I thought when she slit her wrist was, damn, that's like what she did in when she first got to Aretuza, and she wanted to keep those scars as a reminder. And then she was so willing to do it again, except this time for Ciri rather than self-pity. So I thought all of that was like nice call to Yennefer as a character and what she went through in season one.
I agree. I thought it was a really cool moment to see. We know how selfish she is. We know what her image means and her power to everybody else. Like mm-hmm. we said, she freed Kahir and ran away rather than admit she didn't have powers. So to watch her make a sacrifice, it was like, hey, like, yeah, and you actually care about Siri.
Especially after her, yeah, like Luke was just saying, being all about herself for this whole season, basically, she was only for herself. So it was a nice moment for her to just finally realize that Siri is important to not only her, but also to her lover, Geralt, you know.
Luke, that's actually really good comparison with the genie and everything for the season one. I never thought of that. Honestly makes sense. It could be the same chant. I haven't paid attention.
That would be insane. That would be really cool. Did that.
You haven't been studying your Elvis or your elder?
Nah, my elder tongue is pretty shoddy, if I'm honest. But I loved this line where Geralt is saying, you know, we need to trap Volothmia once and for all. If you can pull monsters through monoliths, maybe you can send one back. She's like, oh, Yennefer's lessons. I don't know if I had enough time. I was like, didn't you only get two lessons? Like, one was the orbiculum and two was the bridge.
I mean, didn't she just like completely change the topography of the largest river on the continent in the second lesson, though? Seems like she's got the juice at the very least.
Yeah.
She teleported in that second lesson from one side of the river to the other, which will come into play in 1 second. But right here, she pulls up a portal. And this portal looks different from the monolith ones. I don't know exactly if that means anything. And I guess Siri could single this one out because of the pull thing that she was talking about. You know, she feels a pull from some monsters, monoliths. Maybe she could feel the pull that the Deathless Mother had to her original sphere, because that was one of my big ones. It was like, how did Siri know which door to open, quote unquote? But as the portal opens, Yen actually, her body like lurches forward, like the Deathless Mother was like jumping into it, not Yen's body specifically, but like she was being pulled. I thought that was really interesting. And Geralt ends up grabbing her, and Siri ends up getting pulled into the portal as well. We see the Deathless Mother go off immediately, and then holy shit, we get the Wraiths of Morg, the Wild Hunt come rattling in. And Kyle, you got a little glimpse of them before, but what are your thoughts on them now that you got them talking a little bit?
If I'm honest, I literally had no idea what was going on in this scene.
It's tough. This scene is just, I mean, they're in a whole nother fucking universe. And I think this whole Wild Hunt thing, like, we can hold off on opinions about it, because it seems like it opens up problems. Because how was the Wild Hunt seemingly based in this universe that the Deathless Mother is from also popping up in the main universe? And then also it seems like the Deathless Mother now is the new vessel now one of the Wild Hunts. So meaning, like, if we see them again in the future, she's going to be part of it. That part's fine. I just don't get the double cross of the Wild Hunt in multiple universes. And again, there's no source material to go off of, except maybe the video game. I don't really know much. The video game's called, I think Witcher 3 is called The Wild Hunt, so I don't know if they get into that. But yeah, that it seems like there's potential problems, but at face value, it was just, I'm just taking it as it was badass. We'll get answers next season.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it, because I don't think you're supposed to know too much about it right now.
We have no idea. As finishing the books, like, I still had no idea what the Wraiths of Morg and what the Wild Hunt was in the books. So hopefully, like Luke said, we can get an actual definition of what and where they're from, because I'm also just so confused on what they, if they're symbolic or if they're like actually a thing, you know. I have no idea.
Yeah, they're supposed to be an omen, but also still a thing. Like, you see them physically, but, and they're an omen, but I don't think they're supposed to be like people that come down and start fucking murdering, like, people. Like, it looks like they're setting up to be actual fighters.
Like, I think in the books, like, isn't it like, it's basically like Aurora Borealis. Like, you see visions of people just running through the sky basically. And it's just like
signifying the end of days are coming or something like that.
So hopefully we get into it. That's all I wanted them to say about that.
The dialogue line was cool.
But yeah.
Yeah. Child of the Elder Blood. Blood. Starry-eyed daughter of chaos. Join our hunt. Your place is among us. You are ours. What does that mean, Kyle?
Means that guy is
gone dibs.
Grandfather.
Nice.
It could be. I mean, I think that the Wraiths, though, like, historically, they're just like really influential people, right? Kind of. Or like, do we know? No. I thought they were supposed to be like the world's greatest warriors is what they were supposed to be in the books, but maybe I'm
now crazy. You're thinking of Wheel of Time.
Yeah. It's very possible. <The horn.
laughs> I do like the epithet, I believe that's how you pronounce that word, of starry-eyed daughter of chaos. Yeah, I'm a sucker for a nice epithet and things like that, so
are you just gonna keep using the word till it feels
is
right?
Is it epitaph or epitaph?
It just feels right saying it that way, so I'm going to keep rolling with it. But I mean, especially because fantasy series like this are ripe with them, so it always feels nice when they're good and they hit hard.
Yeah, I just think this was a great seed plant. We got a glimpse into another universe. It looked wildly different. That's just good aesthetic. And then the Wild Hunt's clearly going to be more important, just like the monoliths are, than we thought, and just like the conjunction of spears. So it seems like they're going to stay in this path of all this new big level lore is going to play way more of an important role. And that's fine. I mean, as long as they do it okay.
The Wild Hunt sounds like college. Am I right?
To end the scene, Ciri just grabs Geralt and Yen's hands and teleports them back. Doesn't portal them, teleports them. We are back at Cara Morhen. Ciri is saying to Geralt, you know, was that the race of Morg? And she was like, yeah, but, you know, we're safe for now. Don't worry about it. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Basically setting up later season shit, like you were saying. Yen's wrists, she's all healed up. She goes up to Conan and starts healing him. So, you know, her magic is back right away. I don't really understand how or why. I understand that she made a sacrifice and she righted her wrong. But I don't know. I don't understand it.
I just take it as the Deathless Mother is such a powerful entity, write it off as it flowed through her, left residual power, reawakened it, blah, blah, blah. It's good enough.
Yeah, that's a little lame for me. I wish I had more of an explanation, but I don't think we're going to get one.
It's like the Magicians. What's Julia? Like, she had her powers gone, and then was it?
No. Kind of the spark regrew. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Yen's power's back. Vesemir is grabbing everyone's medallions, and this is when Geralt kind of walks up and says, you know, we're leaving. I don't know where we just went, but I did see that the Wild Hunt is after Ciri, so we got to go. Vesemir was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, I should have trusted you. And he was like, no. It's not because you just stabbed my daughter, Ciri. Don't worry.
That's fine.
I was pissed. So, yeah, I don't know. I am very curious to see if we're going to get Vesemir and Kara Morhen in season three? I assume we will, because it's such a big part of the story, but I mean, who knows?
I don't, it won't be a whole season again. If anything, it'll just be like a pit stop, I feel like, at some point in time.
Mm. So the last line he says to him is, she's marked for something. Ciri, this girl, is marked for something. The Wild Hunt, Nilfgaard, everyone on the continent won't stop coming for her. So I got to leave for your sake. Goes and has a combo with Yen real quick. And she's saying, yeah, you got your magic. You know, she was saying, yeah, I felt it come back when I sacrificed myself. I do it again in a heartbeat. So she's basically coming to terms with, I'm sorry. I sacrificed myself for her. I hope you understand that I realize how much she means to you. That was so many pronouns. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
I think that it's nice that we're kind of sandwiching. The beginning of the season was kind of Geralt becoming, or coming to terms rather, of what it is to be a dad to Ciri. Mm-hmm. And now the ending is now Yen knows what it's like to be a mother.
My favorite like intricacy of their dialogue back and forth is that Geralt does not forgive Yennefer yet. He says like the pathway is there. Maybe we can get over this together, but right now I don't trust you. And that's how Geralt should be. He's very, very defensive. And what happened this episode that would have made him forgive Yennefer, besides like a little bit of sacrifice? Like, I'm all in on how Geralt reacted. It makes sense. Mm.
If he started kissing her and shit, I would have been
furious. That would have been not good.
I'm just going to comment on the concept that her offering up her entire life is a little bit of sacrifice.
Yeah, that's it. It's basically maybe a watch.
I'm just playing.
You could have done more again.
Yeah. Selfish. Yeah, why are you even still here?
Geralt is telling her, use your knowledge of magic to train the girl. You're the only person who has helped her control her powers, even if it was just a little bit. And she has a weird line where she's like, as if I trust anyone else with her. I'm like, all right, you're still getting back in good graces. Don't push
it. Right.
That's kind of her, though, isn't it?
Yes, you're right. That totally.
I guess
is,
show her. I can't comment on any other mediums of The Witcher.
That's a Yen quote. That holds true.
Yeah, I just love that. Just that picture of them, like Yen sitting down next to Ciri and Geralt kind of standing behind them. That's like the fucking squad.
Yeah, it is. That's fam.
Yeah.
He brings up the golden dragon from season one. You guys remember the name?
Jackdaws.
Oh, the real name is just insane, right? Yeah.
Villain Tretton Mirth. Okay. That was the name of the golden dragon.
Oh, you're talking about the old man version.
Basically the same thing. But Villain Tretton Mirth, he told us that we were made for each other, destined for each other, and that nothing would come of it because destiny alone is insufficient. Something more is needed. She is something more.
And that's iconic, right? Something more. Isn't that like a term?
That's a chapter.
It's a chapter name. Yeah. Like, I think it's like an iconic chapter or something. It's basically like, it's like the name. What was the dear friend? Like, it's like, you know, one of those things in the community that people recognize as like important for the Witcher.
I didn't catch it, but glad you pointed it out.
I wrote it in quotes. Don't worry.
Nice.
Like Kyle said, they go to Ciri. They have a little chat. You know, they're saying, hey, it's us three now. We're going to help each other. What is destined cannot be avoided, and it shouldn't be. So we're just going to face it head on. Geralt goes a little bit into what Volothmir wanted from you, saying she has been here since the conjunction. She was from another sphere, but has been stuck here this whole time. These monoliths that you shatter that pull another species of monsters through every time you scream, those could be gateways to other spheres. Her scream awoke her, and that's why she wanted you. She wanted to go home. So I guess her first scream from the first monolith from season one awoke the Deathless Mother, and we just never saw that.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's interesting to weave it in there.
Mm-hmm. Again, just want to reiterate the love of seeing our fam together. As book readers, we've wanted to see this for a little bit now, and we're glad we got it at the end of season two. This is
Us show watchers have been looking forward to it as well.
As well, yes. But this is like the strongest family in all of existence. Like, I don't think anyone in
Incredibles
Witcher in Witcher history.
Incredible.
That was the first family that
came. Could top this family. That's funny that was the first
especially
one.
Especially if you add Uncle Yasker to the picture, you know.
Have you ever heard of the monkey family from the One Piece universe?
That's true as well.
It's pretty good.
Because Geralt, those dudes can beat some ass.
Geralt ends this by saying, like, hey, I figured all that out, but what I still don't understand is why Nilfgaard knew that you were the key to their future. Like, how did they know before anyone else? How do they know the truth about you? And
put a pin in that right? Scene? Yeah, let's put a pin in that
we'll
one. Save it.
That'll be the last scene that we cover. Well, we're going to jump to Aretuza real quickly because there was a big Tisea scene. She is giving a speech to the Brotherhood. She's saying, you know, she has green eyes and ashen hair. That's iconic, Ciri. That is what everybody is looking for when they hear of Ciri. Like all these wanted posters and all these orders, they're like, green eyes, ashen hair, go find her. So that was iconic to get that. You know, the Lion Cub of Sintra alive and with a Witcher at Sodden. They're all freaking out about it. Like, what's going on? They are also learning that Dijkstra came to Aretuza and he's sniffing around for something. So they don't really trust Redania. They say, hey, if Redania actually gets Sintra, they're going to be the most powerful one and we're going to be licking their boots. We can't let this happen. We can't let Nilfgaard or Redania get Ciri. So what should we do? Let's put a bounty on her. Everybody's going for Ciri now. Everybody in the world.
This just feels like one of those classic, like One Piece in between arc things where we get like just different viewpoints and updated bounties and shit like that. It's just a nice reset to know where everyone in like the main politics stands with Ciri, because that's what we're doing. We're just jumping from scene to scene. And I want to take the next one, but Kyle keeps shaking his head like he has something to say here. About Tisea. Yeah,
fuck Tisea.
Dude.
All my homies hate Tisea.
That's what I was thinking. I loved her so much. Yeah. And then all of a sudden she's like, we got to snag this bitch.
What a betrayal of the highest order.
Yeah, right.
It's literally in South Park when like the gang, the four guys are all up to something. And like Kyle says something maybe a little slightly ridiculous. And Cartman just like grabs Kenny and goes to Stan. And he's just like, guys, we got to kill Kyle. <It's> like, we got to kill Ciri here. But yeah, again, this is just a great setup here. Again, politics, love it, especially in these moments with just all these powerhouse mages and and kings and everything. It's just really cool seeing how they know each other.
And what kings and queens that we know? Do we know
Foltis was there?
I know there was another book one, but I'm not sure.
Foltis was there. Queen Maeve. Maeve. She was the younger woman who was talking, saying she actually had the line, you know, I'll come out and say it. The girl was far less trouble for us when she was dead. So that's when they say, we'll put a bounty on the girl. I think there's a few other ones. I actually tried looking it up. I didn't get any confirmed names, so I don't want to be putting names out there that don't exist.
And I think Queen Maeve, and I could be wrong, and I'm not going to say it now, but just a nod to anybody that's read the books. I'm pretty sure she has one of the funniest, cool moments in the entire book series.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's her as well.
Okay, cool. We're thinking
of the same one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me get the next one if we're good.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much it. The only thing we got is to say it says welcome to the Brotherhood to Queen Maeve. Cool. Maeve or Maeve, I still don't know. Anyway,
when you say Queen Maeve, I just think of the boys. Isn't that
exactly
her name?
That's Queen Maeve. Queen Maeve is, yeah. So when they said put a bounty.
June 3rd, season 3.
Yeah, it's coming out.
When they said put a bounty, I don't know if they meant kill or capture. And to be honest, it might be up in the air.
I feel like if I'm thinking of it from the perspective of that time period, I would just say capture is dead or alive.
Yeah, but I feel like it seems like even if it is alive, it's with the mindset that they're going to kill it.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Like kill first, and if you like, I guess if you can capture alive, but like just kill first.
Just context of the scene. Maeve said she was better. She was way more helpful when she's dead. I think that's just it.
Yeah. And also, anybody
that
who
easier to hate to say it, so that's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, fuck it. And anybody who protects her, you got that line as well.
Yeah.
So now people that protect her are targets.
Are bounties going to be a thing now?
I wish.
Anything's on the table with this damn show.
Power scale the Witcher universe.
Like
bounties?
Witcher's 1 million berries.
I hope we get like a currency amount. I almost said dollar amount. But
no, there, I don't think we would. But
I doubt they toss around George Washington's on the continent.
There's a few different things. There's like Orins. There's Nilfgaardian marks. There's different currencies for different parts of the continent.
Yeah,
it's actually really confusing in the game because you have to go to a bank and then get your other. It's a whole
Is there more trustworthy ones than other ones?
I think Orin's is like the one that is universal or something.
That's
like
hilarious,
that.
Hilarious that there's more like sound money.
Nilfgaardian marks, you don't want to trust that.
Yeah, yeah. So. It's similar like Wheel of Time, though. You get a Tarvalon mark, it's like, oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You got a budget to check.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got to trust those ones.
All right, Luke, you got this one?
Yeah, so the next scene is directly after jumping from the Brotherhood led by Taseya, we now are going to catching back up to Rience and the aftermath of what was going on with the last time we saw him, where Lydia, the other mage that was there, she like inhaled Ciri's blood, and it just, I think when we talked on about last podcast, you guys thought, or Kyle, you might have said you thought she died, or it was implied. Yeah. So this is her showing back up. She's basically, they're both of their faces are just completely destroyed. But they're talking to, I think they refer to him as their lord. So I just want to leave it up in the air, of course, just to ask you, put it on the board while we're here, of who you think they're talking to. And if there's any reason behind it.
Who's their employer?
Yeah.
Vilgefortz.
Okay. Any reason why?
Well, isn't the power that he has, I feel like I remember his fight with Kahir was him like moving like places very quickly. And they mentioned Rience says multiple times, like, your guy would be here immediately. Your guy would be here immediately. So
I'll say, though, it's what you're thinking for that scene is he teleports a sword. I don't think it's himself, but he teleports a sword a lot.
Still, so he's a mage, isn't he?
That's a that's just an interesting pick, just because, you know, you've obviously had your qualms with him, especially that one scene in season one towards the end where he kind of wakes up and he gives that like evilish looking smirk. So it's just an interesting guess. All, so. But it's so hard to tell, obviously, too, because as we just saw in the scene before this, so many people are trying to put a hit out on Ciri anyway. Like,
yeah, I just think also like they're not like working for Nilfgaard, but like they're kind of working with Nilfgaard in the sense that like they kind of get a prisoner out of the prison in that happens in Syntra, right? Is he not locked up in Syntra? Yeah.
Yes.
Which is the Nilfgaardian stronghold. Vilgefortz has some type of odd relationship with Nilfgaard in a way. So that would just be my guess.
And obviously, they do. They hint.
I feel like if it was, I'm sorry to talk over you though, but I feel like there's a reason why we don't see who it is at this point. Could just be because they're waiting to reveal the character next season. But I feel like that also gives a little credence to like it might be someone that we know already.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of talk about like what their plans are, or at least what like how this news about Ciri and all this war in the north between. Yeah. Nilfgaard and Redania, like all this chaos is kind of going to give them a chance to go look for the girl, why the Northern war is happening. But one thing I want to point out is Lydia, who is this new character, she can't talk anymore. And so what she does is she communicates telepathically. And that's why you have like the weird sound when they're going through it. And that's the part that I am just so disappointed in myself about, because as a book reader, like the second this reveal happens, like she has a fucked up face and she starts talking telepathically. I was so mad at myself for not remembering this character, because it's just so unique. Like, right. Like, she has the fucked up face. Rience has the fucked up face, but she's telepathic. He is just a crazy motherfucker and they're always around each other. I should have clicked easier, but either way, I'm happy that she's here. And I think the backstory of how she got her face fucked up is cool.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how involved she is in the show going forward. She has to be involved, but I don't know if she'll be a mainstay or like a very rare appearance.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, she looks god awful.
Vilgefortz is a big character, so she'll probably be a bigger character.
Vilgefortz is literally team fuck Taseya, except intercourse with Taseya.
So. Team fuck Taseya.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, are you trying to insinuate we're on the same side here, Paul? No.
I don't know, man. No. I don't know. But that's all we get for the firefucker for right now. Going to the next quick scene, we get all the elves, Francesca and Philavandril, around the fire. But they're on the run now. They're just not aligning themselves with anybody. They just hate humans. Francesca's saying, like, revenge. When the humans arrived, we welcomed them as peers, and it led us to a mass grave. I don't want revenge. I don't want revenge. I want justice. So seems like she's on a murder spree. Her scouts bring up somebody that they found spying on him. Ends up being Istrid. He says, I have some information that I think could help. Princess Earl of Syntra. She is why Nilfgaard attacked Sodden. They wanted to train you for more attacks to flush her out. She's getting carried away, and he has a line where it's like, she's Hein Eker or something like that. I don't know. Sorry. Elder Tongue.
Henkir. Oh, Henkir or something like that.
She's Elder Blood is what Francesca hears. And now she knows that she's a big deal. She's one of yours, but different. I've never seen anything like her power. The one that Ithilien prophesized, saying she's the one that could save us.
I actually really am enjoying Istrid's character in the show. In the books, he literally, I think, is mentioned one time, twice, and then is just a throwaway character when he does in reality have like kind of a big job, I guess. But like he's an architect or something along those lines in the books. And I just like how in the show here, they're really giving him
he's an archaeologist.
Archaeologist. No, I mean, I that's why I kind of like paused there because I was like, I'm not saying the right word. I was going to say whatever Jing's dad was, whatever Jing's or Gon's dad was, Jing from Hunter x Hunter.
Hunter.
Yeah. But anyway, I like what they're doing here. Like he has a purpose. Like he's a human that wants to align with the elves and at least like kind of patch up that history. So I really like how they're taking his character in this. And especially since like, you know, well, I might have just said a spoiler, so I'm just going to.
Well, no, because you do like that's his whole purpose of being here is he's bringing this information to them because once it clicks with Francesca, she says, "Okay, that's like the prophecies, Ithilien's prophecy." And then they just say that basically there's a chance that because Ciri has the Elder Blood, she could save the Elven race, and this is going to completely change up the priorities, I think, of the Elf faction. And that's going to be fun to see because now they have so many fucking enemies with murdering babies out here. So like there's going to be a lot of dynamics with Francesca. I think she's going to be a bigger player than I thought she was going to be.
I think Francesca is going to be split in focus here, whether kill all human babies or, you know, find Ciri. Yeah. I don't know which one she's going to put more force into.
Probably killing babies.
It seems like that's where she's at right now.
At least in the short term.
At the end, we see an owl chilling on a tree, watching this whole thing just fly away, flies right to Dijkstra's window in Redania. He's shaving his head, looking like a beast. Shirt's off, Kyle. Shirt is off.
As it should always be.
Yeah. And as they're kind of having this beginning of the exchange, you see in the background, she transforms from an owl into a woman. Kyle, just curious, were you expecting this? Because they've been talking to this damn owl all season.
I guess part of me was. I was more interested in like Dijkstra himself, but I like it a lot. I thought it was definitely like, oh, okay, let's go. I didn't think that we would get a reveal like this. I don't even want to say this early. I just was not something that I was expecting to know. Mm-hmm. I would say this soon after the owl got introduced.
Philippa is her name's Philippa, and they say, I don't know if they say her name, but they have it in the subtitles there. She's a very interesting character.
Yeah, but definitely the people were very excited to see that she was actually cast in season 2 going forward. She was cast super late, so like fans didn't really know what was going on. And then it ends up she only gets like one kind of scene. So people are like, blah, fuck, we wanted more of her. But she is, like Luke said, going to be big going forward.
From a book reader perspective, it's just cool how they were still able to surprise someone, like people like us.
No, I wasn't surprised.
I personally, it's funny because Luke wasn't. Luke was.
You weren't surprised?
More surprised.
No, she is. She uses the owl in the books.
No, I'm sorry. I'm saying you were surprised.
Okay. Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because it's been so long since I've read the books that major plot points are the only thing that really stick in my head. And I just kind of. I knew we were missing a mage. I just didn't piece it together that it was her. So I like how they revealed Philippa and Lydia as these two characters for the upcoming seasons. Like they still made it feel like it was a good twist for book readers still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's showing that not all mages are on the same page, man. Mages are all over the place. There's all different kinds of them.
Before we move on, Paul, I have a question. You sent this outline to us and it says Elf Scene with Sisters. Was that an autocorrect for Elf Scene with Istrid?
Yes.
Because I was reading that as sisters, and I'm like, dude, did I black out during this? Like, no, sisters?
We can't move on yet because there's one more good line here. And Paul, you got that written down, that quote?
Yeah. So Philippa turns into a woman and says, you know, I'm saying that word is out about the girl. Well, word is out about Ciri. And Dijkstra turns around and says, well, you know, I dare say things just got more fun, Philippa. Bring me the bard. It's about time he paid back his benefactor.
Let's go.
Yaskir. What did you get yourself into?
Is Geralt going to, I guess, is this another level of betrayal for Geralt?
We'll see.
I don't think he could handle it. I think Yen and now Yaskier. Holy shit.
Just a phenomenal end to the season.
Well, we're not done yet because we got this final
scene.
This is the fucking scene. But this is back in Sintra, which we've been jumping through every time we're trying to talk about Nilfgaardians here. And I think this is like a, is this a flash scene? Because we have a voiceover a little bit, right? Or is it just...
We get the announcer, like the doors are open and then there is a person there announcing the arrival of... He goes, attention, Highness Emperor Emir Van Emrys, the White Flame has arrived, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I was getting chills. Fringilla and Kahir are walking behind him. We're not getting his face. It's just the back. Kyle, did you recognize his hair from the back?
Nah, I mean, his flow was great, though.
Yeah, I know. I knew you loved his flow. And I know you love hair, so that's why I was worried that you knew going forward.
Looked like Loki from behind to me. I was like, oh, it's Loki. I was like, that's Loki.
If I was Kahir, I'd be getting rid of that Christopher Walken cut once this guy comes.
Yeah, seriously.
Because you're just always playing second fiddle to that flow.
Fringilla is telling King Emir, Emperor Emir, that the elves are fighting and they're doing their bidding for them. They are also pursuing the girl, of course. They're still going for Sintra. Emperor Emir says, how did you convince the elves to fight for you? In my experience, elves only think about themselves. Should they go on... And they lean into their lie and they say, by killing their hope, you know, it was us who blamed Redania, but we actually killed the elven baby and pointed them in the right direction. And we're kind of getting this line, losing a child is brutal, but you were right. It can move mountains. They go on to say, you know, desperate times, desperate measures. And King or Emperor Mira goes, yeah, desperate measures indeed. I should know. That's how I felt when I first arrived and I learned that I could no longer count on you to fulfill my mission. And they're like, what? And he's like, I'm the one who ordered the death of that elfin baby. I had to. It was the best path to helping me find my daughter. Take them away. Dooney is alive.
Yeah. I've been yo-yoing with the idea of saying this, but this was like totally spoiled for me. I knew this was going to happen. Damn. Going into maybe like the last three episodes, but I did honestly like the part when it was revealed that he was the one that killed the baby. Yeah. That obviously is supposed to be the secondary reveal, but that for me ended up being the primary reveal.
How did you feel when you read or learned that Dooney was the was Emir?
I was just very interested in how the show was going, like what it was going to look like in the show. And I thought it, like I said, with the whole, like, I was the one who killed the elf baby thing. I thought it nailed it. And I'm a little upset that it was spoiled for me.
Mm.
I can't remember if this is like second to last or last book reveal.
Last book.
Yeah. It's like,
it's just like the big fight, the big climax just happened. And then all of a sudden in walks Emir. And Geralt kind of looks up and he's like, oh, what's up, Dooney?
Yeah, like, and you're like, Jesus.
What?
That
Sorry,
was,
should we put a book spoiler there? It was pretty nuts. So I understand why they had to do it this way. Throughout the books, all of them, even from like book two on, we get chapters from the point of view of King, I keep calling him King, Emperor Emir. So you can't really do that in the show unless you didn't show his face the entire time, which would be like, all right, that's fucking annoying. So I get that they had to get this big reveal out of the way in order to be able to incorporate him in the storyline and the plot for season 3 and 4 without, you know, beating around the bush.
Yeah. And it was it was a great mic drop moment to end the season.
Oh yeah. And honestly, this was like the end of, like, the Geralt and Ciri and Yennefer stuff, like when I was mentioning like the how the season felt a little prologue-ish, this was what was like, okay, now this is like a legitimate, like, this is meat and potatoes story right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Kahir and Fringilla, hasta la vista, man. Into the dungeon.
Now that we're at the end, I'll just say this as part of my whole like series thoughts a little bit. They're definitely the two that, I guess, like, this is going to work out where it's going to slightly hard reboot their characters and potentially put them on the path that I have envisioned in my head. Like, this moment of putting them into, throwing them into jail and like seeing how they react being in Nilfgaard's like captivity. But like they were way different than what I imagined. And maybe this gets him back on track because I really, really like at least Kahir's book counterpart. But this might get them back on track. And if not, and they do keep going in a wildly different way, it's going to be very interesting to see like what happens if they get out or like if they, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
It just sucks knowing that they are so off book canon, just because, again, it's just these mysteries and fears that we have of things potentially getting ruined later on. But this season has reinforced for me that I can have faith in Netflix and at the same time, Henry Cavill to be able to produce something that's good and makes sense to the audience. And yeah, Dooney, I think, is cast. He's how I pictured him as the books is how I pictured him on, like, is how they did it perfect to how he looks on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. That line you said about Henry Cavill, he is unbelievably necessary to the success of the show. We've talked about it a bunch of times, but I mean, the more I listen to interviews, the more I read, the more I believe that the show wouldn't be nearly as successful without him. Because, for example, the scene, I believe it's in episode 3 or 4, when the Chernabog comes in and actually kills the horse Roach, you know, Ciri and Geralt, they're at that river. They wanted, I forget her name because I just don't really like her choices. But
Tris?
Yes, Lauren Hisrick, I believe her name is. She's like the showrunner, and she said she was supposed to have a like comical line there. Like, oh, like something along the lines of like, Geralt doesn't really care, but Geralt was like, I really don't think that's the way to go. I think Geralt needs a, I'm sorry, Henry. He was like, I really don't think that's what Geralt would do. I think he really cares about his horse. I think we need to get like a nice scene. And they did give that. So that's just one small example of why Henry Cavill is implementing little things that have a huge impact for the entire show. Yeah. So he's the best. But that's kind of it. Did you guys have any last thoughts about the season, where we might head it, and hit us with a rating for the episode?
Yeah, I'll go first. Fantastic season. I've been saying it constantly. Like, I already talked about my gripes with the Witchers and the fire magic. I don't nothing really sticks out too much as something I'm hating. Again, maybe a little bit of the changes for Kahir and Fringilla, but like, choreography was amazing. Henry was just captivating. And I think that the audience received it relatively well. Like, Netflix is still pedal to the metal. I think they're green lighting the Blood Origin prequel story. The movie was successful of Vesemir's past. It seems like the Witcherverse is getting bigger and bigger, and we're only going up from here. I thought that this episode was probably a 9.5. It was one of my favorites of the whole 2 seasons. It just, the season kept trending upward for me. And looking back, like the first 2 episodes might have been the weakest for me. And that's saying a lot, because I talked pretty highly of them when we podcasted on them initially. It's just fantastic fantasy. We're living in the prime of TV. This budget's amazing. The sound's amazing. It's so good. And I brought this up when we talked about it, like in the off season of between season 1 and 2, the off season of like what's going to happen with Ciri, like aging up, and she's going to keep aging up. So she hopefully gets better and better at the action stuff, because I'm hoping that she's going to go full Arya Stark and just get a lot of combat scenes, you know, and that'll be really good to see how she grows and becomes also at the same time more magical as she trains with Yennefer and shit. So like, all that's amazing. The brotherhood and their politics. Let's get it. Fuck yeah. Bring on season 3.
9.5. Wow.
I loved it.
Yeah. Season, like overall season was, like we said at the beginning, just way, I thought it was way better than season 1. Just so much more fleshed out characters and a lot of interesting plot points. And even if they did divert a little bit, I think they're doing a great job of still making it feel like this is, you know, something that they had, you know, gotten off the books basically. I will say the one thing I'm looking forward to in the next seasons is probably Yen and Ciri's relationship. I just think that those two are just incredible, just their personalities clashing, and I'm excited to see how they develop in the next season. I would give the finale an 8.5 to a 9, leaning more towards a 9. Just all these reveals that we got in this episode were just incredible. Top 10, like, you know, we got top CGI moments here with the fights and everything. So can't really go bad with a 9 out of 10.
speaking as the season as a whole, I feel like I've been saying it throughout this and also the Wheel of Time stuff, is that it was such a nice jump in quality from season one. Just so nice to have a linear storyline. And Henry Cavill is just amazing. The performances are really good. They introduced a lot of really cool new characters while also keeping all of the older established characters in their prominent roles, which I really did enjoy. And yeah, there's just like a lot of, I guess, interesting storylines that are happening right now. I would say that what I'm most looking forward to in season three is just Geralt, Yen, and Ciri being the guys and gals. I guess guy and gals. But this episode specifically, I think I'll give it like an 8.5. I honestly think, I feel like the first like 2/3 of it, like nothing really happens.
I get that.
And then it's kind of an avalanche at the end, which isn't a terribly bad thing, but just overall as an episode, I think it's just so backloaded. So I'll give it an 8.5.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give this, originally I probably would have given it like a 4.
Oh, I wanted a 3.
I was going to say 3. I was being nice here. I think I wanted to give it, going into this podcast, like a 5.5, 6. Talking to you guys, you make me kind of like appreciate it more. So I'll give it a 6.5. I think, like Kyle said, it was just, it seemed like a lot didn't happen. I understand there was huge moments, but there is, I feel like there was great moments sprinkled into a kind of whatever episode for me. Cause I mean, Ciri was basically not in it at all. I mean, she was kind of in a dream world. I didn't really understand the resolution of how Yen got her powers back and Volothmir like just wanted to go home. Like, if she just wanted to go home, why didn't she just open a portal, when she had control of Ciri to go home? There was like weird finale wrap up shit that I just wasn't so fond of. But that being said, insane moments. Geralt fighting that basilisk, the coolest fucking thing ever. Good Yashgir comedic lines. Yen got her power back. I'd say 6.5.
Nice.
Yeah, I liked it. Really, really looking forward to season three. I can't imagine where they're going to take it, but I think going forward, I'm going to be more open to the first watch through. But I think that's going to do it for us, guys. Season two of The Witcher in the books. If you like what you heard, our podcast also covers Wheel of Time, Dexter, Midnight Mass, Rick and Morty, all different kinds of shows, but really good shows. last time I'm going to say this, if you want to toss a coin to your Bingetown, we have a Patreon up where you can become a Bingetown homie. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and hit subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Or the easiest way to do all of that is to go to our website at bingetowntv.com. It'll take you everywhere. We are so excited to cover The Witcher, to have covered, I guess now we are officially done. I know there's a lot of Witcher content out there, so thank you for sticking with us, listening to it. We hope you had fun. And from everyone at Bingetown TV, thank you so much for listening.
Love you guys.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.